Would you raise your hand, please, sir, and state your full name?
My cell phone is not there.
You sound as hard to tell the truth, the whole truth, you have the truth, and say you saw here.
Could you please repeat that?
Yes, sir. Do you sound as hard to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth in this hearing, so help you God?
I cannot use that phrase to help
you. Do you sound as hard to tell the truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, I do.
Yes.
Mr. Meyer, as you know, I am James Irwin. I am counsel for Samuel Weiser, Inc., against whom you have brought this action. We're here to ask you certain questions with respect to the entire transaction that is involved in the lawsuit. And before we start, I would like to have it clear to you that if you don't understand my questions, please say so. If you want them repeated or if you want a clarification, we will. Tell me so. We will make them as clear as we can possibly do it. I think it might be also well, unless you are familiar with the deposition process, are you?
No, sir.
Well, it might be well to state that your counsel can and may object to any of the questions that I ask, and at that point we may stop for discussion. But under all normal circumstances, the questions have to be answered unless your counsel advises you for valid reasons that they mustn't be answered. Is that fair to state, counsel?
Certainly.
You've already stated your name, sir. What is your present address?
In this town, or my present...
Where do you know
less permanent address?
Where do you live?
Nashville, Tennessee.
And what is your address in Nashville?
42 Akron Park Drive.
One second, please.
I'm sorry.
Let me just off the record. It will take me a while to get used to your accent because it is foreign and I have not met you before. So if I have to interrupt in the first 5 minutes. You live in Nashville, Tennessee.
Uh-huh.
And your address is what?
422 Eklund Park Drive.
And how long have you lived in Nashville, Mr. Mora?
Approximately 2 years. I'm very bad at dates, that's why I brought this chronology. I think I came into the United States in August 1981.
And from whence did you come?
From Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, where I resided.
From where?
From Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, where I resided.
And how long did you reside in Brazil?
Well, ever since I went back to it from the United States in 1961, so I suppose it was about 20 years.
Are you a native of Brazil?
Oh, definitely, yes.
Were you born in Rio?
Yes.
And where were you, where did you receive your education, Mr. Oliver?
High school in a Anglo-American school in Rio de Janeiro, high and low school. Then, what you call the upper grades of, no, excuse me, elementary school in Anglo-American school in Rio de Janeiro, high school in a military high school in Rio de Janeiro, and university, I came over to the United States, to Louisiana State University, and studied there.
And did you receive a degree at Louisiana State?
Bachelor of Arts, and I did 1 year towards Master of Arts, but I got bored and dropped out.
And when were you born, Mr. Moore?
1931, June 27.
How long have you been interested and active in the occult?
My interest started when I was 11 years old.
So that would have been in 1942?
Yes.
Approximately.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us how you became active?
Yes. No, I guess there's no harm in that. There are some things that I might have been sworn never to reveal to anybody under any circumstances, but this is not one of them. My father was a spiritualist. My mother professed to be an atheist. They were separated. My father and I learned to read about when I was about 4 years old. And I had very good taste for reading. My father had a big for those times and that country, library of all kinds of different occult books. And I got interested after reading Zanoni by Goodwill Lytton, which the book is purports to be about Rosicrucians.
I do.
Goodwill Lytton, or Butler or Lytton. It's a difficult name.
I'll get it later. Go ahead.
Which purports to be about the Rosicrucians. And I decided that I wanted to find out the Rosicrucians. So I started getting contact with several Rosicrucian orders, and I didn't like them very much. And eventually I found one that had been founded by a German mystic called Krumheller. And in that order I found for the first time a photograph of Aleister Crowley, whom I did not know was Aleister Crowley at the time.
Was that the OTO at that time?
This organization had been founded by a man called Krumheller, who was a member of the OTO. He was a member of the 8th degree of the OTO, and members of the 8th degree of the OTO have a right to found their own organizations if they like, if they want to. He had founded this, and in the organization, in the larger organization, Reeve, they had a picture of Crowley.
In the organization,
a picture of Crowley.
Aleister Crowley is going to come up very frequently. That's A-L-I-E-S-T-E-R?
Yeah.
A-L-E-I-S-T-E-R, C-R-O-W-L-E-Y.
R-O-W-L-E-Y.
L-O-W-L-E-Y.
My accent again is switched out of the I'm sorry, I stopped, but I don't remember exactly.
In Rio, in the organization, they had a
picture Nobody talked about
it. Crowley sounds like Crowley, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Nobody talked about it. He pronounced it Crowley. Nobody talked about it, but it was there. I thought it was a woman, as a matter of fact. Picture.
That is approximately the time and the method by which you became active.
Yes. It's a bit, if you want me to continue on, I was going to travel to Europe and then come to study in the United States. And the head of a lodge in Rio de Janeiro requested that I go to Germany and meet and talk with the son of the founder, who was supposed to have inherited the directorship of the organization, and to act as a kind of diplomat between them. They were having attritions.
Yeah, who was the founder?
The founder was called Krumheller, Arnold Krumheller, and the son was called, by coincidence, Parsifal Krumheller.
Oh, the son was called?
Parsifal.
Parsifal.
Yeah. And I met Krumheller, and as I went into Europe, I stopped in Portugal and got into a bookshop, and I opened a book at random in the occult section. I always rent the occult sections, and I found the photograph of that strange person that I had seen in Rio, and it was the Great Beast, purporting to be a biography of Aleister Crowley. And that's why I learned a little bit about Aleister Crowley. And when I got to Germany, I asked Mr. Krumheller, many questions about Crowley, and he put me in contact with Mr. Germer in the United States.
And what year was it?
He put me in contact with Mr.
Germer.
G-E-R-M-E-R, Carl Germer.
In the United States.
And what year was that you traveled to Germany and...
The year was 1952. The end of 1952.
You were approximately 21 years old.
Well, I had just become 21 years old. My mother would not have allowed me to travel before.
Mr. Marta, did you know Aleister Crowley?
No.
Never met him. From what you said, I take it you did know Carl Germer.
For several years, yes.
Yes. Can you tell me when and where you met him?
I met him in 1953. It's not part of the... His chronology is not complete. He started it in 1962. I met him in 1953, during a college vacation, and I don't know the exact month, but that can be given if necessary, can provide the data. And that's when I signed the probationer oath in the AA.
Probation?
Probationer. Probationer oath.
Oath.
Oath, not to that.
Oath.
Of the AA. So I remember the year very clearly.
Now, we have an organization known as OTO, and through the literature there appears to be an organization known as AA, the double letters, capital letters A.
Yes.
Is that a separate organization from OTO?
Yes, separate.
I'm not going to be asking you questions that I'm sure you have sworn to secrecy with respect to the rituals and all of that, but I do want to be able to understand.
You can ask me anything you like.
If I ask you secrets, you will be entitled to tell me what you have for secrets, but I would like to clear up some of the confusion about the organization.
I can understand.
Explain then, if you will, what is the AA?
The AA is not a Masonic organization. It's not an organization for social work together. By the way, there is another organization called the Ordo Thelema, which we might, if you like, speak about later on, because it might complicate with the other two. The AA is not easy to define. It's it is an attempt to produce a method of training towards what's usually called mystical attainment by using the method of science. Each member of the AA can, above a certain grade, can receive pupils in the AA and works with his immediate superior. But the members are totally discouraged from meeting socially and working socially with each other in order to avoid any interference between the particular individual researchers. The purpose of purely terms like spiritual and enlightenment and such terms are very vague, and they are vague precisely because the method of science has not been applied very methodically to this kind of game. Let's put it this way.
There is no connection between AA and OTO?
Not necessarily. The only connection between the AA and the OTO since Crowley is that through the AA, Crowley obtained the Book of the Law, and when he became out of head of the Order of the OTO, he adapted all the rituals to the Book of the Law. That's the only connection, really.
Now, let me take you back to Crowley, or at least to some of the history, to see how much you know. But you say he became the outer head of the OTO.
Yes.
Do I understand that is the supreme position in the OTO? There's none higher than that?
Well, the supreme position is the inner head.
All right. Was Crowley ever an inner head?
Yes.
When one attains the post of outer head of the OTO, is it an appointment by someone?
It is usually an appointment by the direct predecessor.
The direct predecessor, outer head.
Appoints the successor.
At the top of the pyramid, so-called, if I may use that metaphor, is the inner head of the OTO.
Yes, and this inner head is a spiritual entity, has no legal value.
I see. Now, in Crowley's time, I understand, and you may agree with me, that Mr. Crowley died in 1947, is that correct?
Yes. Right.
In Crowley's time, were there ever written constitutions or bylaws for the OTO?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That part of those bylaws, which I presume is not secret, had to do with the succession and the perpetuation of the organization.
That part of the bylaws that were not secret had to do with the administration and development and expansion of the organization, but he kept secret the part about the succession.
When he became the outer head, was he, and I guess simultaneously or soon thereafter, the inner head?
Well, you see, the inner head actually is someone who has achieved a certain level of spiritual awareness from which he or she can inspire the members with the aim and purpose of the OTO. And he had achieved that a little bit before, but There's no necessary connection. If he hadn't achieved it, he could still have an outer head, but the inner head would have been someone else.
The inner head then was not the chief executive officer or the director of the organization.
Or it has to be the outer head always.
Now, when you speak of the outer head of OTO in Crowley's time, was there only one OTO, and was he the only outer head?
Let's start with his immediate predecessor, Theodore Royce. When Crowley first got a patent from Royce to work with the OTO in England.
When Crowley first got a patent.
You pronounce the patent? Okay.
So,
from Royce, you got Royce? R-E-U-S-S? Okay. May I go on? Crowley first got a patent from Royce to work with the OTO in English-speaking countries, and mainly England, Ireland, and Scotland, but any other English-speaking countries as well. He immediately adapted the old OTO German rituals to the Book of the Law. This caused a lot of unquiet among other members of the organization all over the world. Lots of them did not want to accept that, but they did not have to accept that. Crowley had permission to do it within the limits of his patent. He could do it as he pleased.
Now, you're reciting this from your general knowledge of the history of the organization.
Yes. Uh-huh.
You were not part of this then.
Oh, no, I wasn't born. Right. I was born.
Now, when you speak of a patent from Mr. Royce, I have to assume then that from what you said, the origins of the OTO were Germanic and probably in Germany.
Oh, yes.
All right.
Under this name and in this form of activity.
The same Latin name.
Oh, yes, yes.
Ordo.
What I'm trying to say is that this organization had existed before.
Right.
Just adopted this name and this man working in Germany at that time.
Right. Excuse me for just 1 minute. We are going to be talking about OTO, which is a Latin, which is the first letters of a Latin name, Ordo, O-R-D-O, Templus, T-E-M-P-L. You got it right there?
Is it the Caption Society of the Hotel before
you? Not society. We're talking not S-O-T-O, O-T-O, but it's those words that you have in front of you, Ordo, Templus, Ordinis. I just wanted to be sure that you understood that.
That's about the only thing I don't understand, because it's in front of me.
Well, perhaps as the day progresses off the record, you have learned a lot from the rest of us. When Mr. Crowley died in 1947, were there in existence on the continent of Europe other independent OTOs?
No, for the simple reason that Crowley first got his patent to work in England and English-speaking countries. But despite the fact that everybody kept complaining to Royce about Crowley, including the Book of the Law, which they considered objectionable and satanistic and evil into the organization, when Royce died, he transferred the outer headship of the order to Crowley, and Crowley became the outer head.
By his will he did this?
I don't know in what form of documents he did it. But those documents were extant. And a guy called Robert or Richard Swinburne and Kramer, or work under the pseudonym in the United States, wrote an enormous book in two volumes, this book, just to prove that Crowley had received the outer headship of the order directly from Royce. So what I'm trying to say is this, after Royce's death, Crowley was the outer head of the order. Anybody who did not accept him or did not work under him could, of course, anybody can call themselves anything they want at any time, but they were not the real OTO. They were not working under Crowley and accepting his authority. By the definition of the structure of the order, they were not the real OTO.
They're not a what?
They're not the real OTO.
Now, let me stop for a second, Mr. Nauta.
If I understand you, and please, if I appear dense, I may be, but I want to be sure that I have the facts in this thing straight. At the time of Crowley's death, Crowley was the head of the OTO as the organization recognized itself, putting aside anybody who might make spurious claims. But Crowley was the order.
Not the order, the head of the order.
The head of the order. Now, can you describe to me at that point the business organization? There had to be business accomplished. I don't want to know your rituals. I don't want to get into that.
That's all right.
3 weeks for the rituals.
The rituals have been furnished to Mr. Bone. You can read them any time.
Well, in any event, the organization had the outer head, and then it had a secretariat. It had some ongoing business center.
Well, you might say that this business organization was one of the most disorganized business organizations that ever existed. Crowley would write to the people who were interested, more or less as I do, except that now we work through a legal framework, and ask, request money, and whoever happened to be the treasurer at the time would be in charge of the money, and they would publish books when they could, and they would run away from the place when they could. And that was an extremely confusing time with great struggle and great fighting, and Crowley was not a very well-organized businessman.
Did Crowley have the authority, in your opinion, to appoint his successor?
Definitely. That's part of the whole tradition of the OTO.
Did he ever do that?
Yes.
And whom did he appoint?
He appointed Carl Germer. He, first in his will, he directed that all his literary remains should, by his executor, sent to Mr. Germer's address in New York.
Sent to Mr.
Germer's address in New York. And in private letters, he told not only Mr. Germer, but all the other pupils that he considered might continue work with the OTO after his death.
Have you ever seen a document?
A success.
Have you ever seen a document that said that was over Mr. Crowley's signature that said to Carl Germer, "You are the new outer head of the order"?
I've seen transcripts of his letters, which were sent me by Mr. Gerald York from England.
Do you have any of those letters?
I have the transcripts of the letters.
You mean by that you mean copies?
Yes, but copies made by Mr. York, not copies of the letters.
Do you happen to have any of those with you?
No, but I think so. I didn't send them to you?
Not from Crowley, no.
But they were letters of yours to me. And you see, it's a letter from York to me reproducing that the text of two letters by Crowley to go. If I didn't send it, I would certainly send it, but I have the impression that this was sent as part of my correspondence to you.
Do you want to see it right now, Jim? I'd be glad to get it out.
No, I just want to know whether or not, as for the purposes of this deposition, a copy of such a document is available. But if I understand what Mr. Motor said, it is not a copy of a document that Crowley wrote. It's a copy of a document from Gerald York. Reporting something which is
inaccurate,
you may have known of.
He states it is a copy, actual copy made by him of the two letters. That's all.
All right.
But I met many of the members of the OTO in the United States. Mr. Germer invited me to visit them, and they all unanimously, including Mr. Grady McMurtry, confirmed and accept the fact that Mr. Germer was the head of OTO.
Are you familiar with, I'm sure you are, Mr. Crowley's will?
Finally, yes.
Well, perhaps you can look with me. This purports to be a copy of the will which was supplied by your attorneys, I believe. It is unsigned, but it's a copy of the text. Last will of Edward Alexander Crowley.
May I look at it?
Yes, you may, of course.
I'm a quick reader.
All right.
without reading word by word and comparing with the copy of official copy that I have, I'd say that this is a copy.
In it, he says that I give him, I'm quoting now from this purported copy of the will of Edward Alexander Crowley. He says, I give and bequeath my books and writings and literary effects so collected to my literary executors, free of all death duties, on trust that they shall hand the same to the Grand Treasurer General of the Order of the Templus Orientis.
I'm sorry, the Grand?
Grand Treasurer General of the Order of Templus Orientis at 260 West 72nd Street, New York City. Now, can you identify who was the Grand Treasurer General then?
That was Mr. Germer, and that was his home address at the time.
All right, thank you. That's one of the things I needed to know. And you are aware, too, I suspect, that in the next sentence of his will, he bequeathed free of all death duties all the copyrights in his books and writings, whatsoever and wheresoever, of which he may have a power to the Ordo Templus Orientis.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, getting back to your personal experience, Mr. Mata, when did you first join the OTO and where?
I was inducted into the ninth degree, and I don't remember the exact. You see, I kept my diaries, but my diaries were not brought to the United States. They're in Brazil, in a lodge is keeping them for me, and they don't speak English.
In a lodge?
A lodge of the OTO. You know, like a Masonic lodge.
And they don't?
They don't speak English, so they wouldn't be able to select among them the ones that I need. Well, I don't remember the exact date. I remember that it was in California that he invited me to go there. And
excuse me, he invited you? Who was he?
Mr. Germer.
Oh.
Mr. Germer invited me to go there. And he inducted me in the ninth, and I had to sign the usual contract. The contract is something simple. It's in two copies. One copy states that the member, both copies state that the member of the ninth promises first that he or she will try to impart the knowledge that has been imparted to him to at least one other person before he or she dies, and that he or she will not use the knowledge involved in that degree to harm any other brother or sister of the OTO, wherever or whatsoever. You sign both copies. One stays with the person who imparts the degree to you, and the other you keep. I lost my copy when I went back to Brazil because I left an entire library, including some very nice books, in the United States, and 1964, I didn't manage to go back to the United States, and they sold it on auction.
When
Mr. Germer's copy was in the Germer Library, but I suspect that it may have vanished completely by now.
But you don't know that.
Well, it's surmise. Considering
it's a surmise.
Yes.
All right. Now. You advanced, I take it, through various degrees of the OTO after that?
Actually, I was inducted directly in the ninth, simply, I would say, because Mr. Germer wanted to induct me into the ninth. And I never had any formal training in any of the degrees of the OTO. As a matter of fact, I was never particularly interested in the OTO. I was interested in the AA. It was Mr. Germer who insisted to induct me in the OTO.
Is the ninth degree the highest degree?
The ninth degree is the highest, with one exception that Crowley invented later on. The ninth degree is the highest degree of spiritual awareness of the order. The tenth was just merely an administrative degree.
Merely
an administrative degree. to it belong the national heads of your order and the outer head of your order. All of them with the same degree, but the outer head being the chief authority over them all.
The chief?
Authority over them all. And the 11th was created by Crowley. And it's a mystical degree and has absolutely nothing to do with the normal administration of the order.
Is the 11th degree still appointed or given to anybody?
It can't be given to anybody. You must reach a certain level of awareness and experience, and if you do, you automatically have that degree, you have the right to it.
Who decides whether or not you reach that degree, you yourself or somebody in the organization?
Well, exist before he created it. It's very easy to reach those things when you are the creator of those things.
All right, let's leave that for a minute. You mentioned earlier something that I wanted to ask you about. What does thelemic mean? T-H-E-L-E-M-I-C.
Thelemic means anything that's related to the law of thelema, and the law of thelema is actually, you might say, a way to summate the three chapters of the Book of Law and the meaning that they're supposed to have. At this stage of the game, it's an extremely vague name, but it's convenient for us to define our difference from other forms of, I wouldn't say religion, but of religious activity.
What is a lemma?
A lemma? Thelema is the Greek word for will, and it's used in...
Excuse me, will, W-I-L-L,
mm-hmm.
Yes.
And it's used in the sense... Look, it's used in the sense of all the illusions that make ourselves, including the fact that we are alive. We are alive because there is some kind of energy in us that keeps us as organized matter, alive and intelligent. If there is any method and purpose behind this organization, this is what's called the will, in this sense. And that's the term thelema. That's what it means.
So that when one speaks of a thelemic organization...
One speaks of an organization that accepts the Book of the Law, or prefers to accept the Book of the Law, and tries, or prefers to try, to apply the Book of the Law in daily life.
Right now, is this the same Book of the Law which Crowley introduced to the OTO against the will of, or against the wishes of some of his contemporaries?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And is the Book of the Law a secret?
Oh no, it's openly published. It has parts of it that are secret, and it has parts of it that nobody else has been able to decipher yet, but everybody keeps trying all the time. And some claim that succeed.
Do you recall when Carl Germer died?
Me?
Yes.
Yes. October 1962, I believe on October 25, 1962. That's one of the few dates that I do remember.
Have you ever seen a copy of Mr. Germer's will?
Finally, yes.
And do you have an authenticated copy of his will, or do your attorneys?
I don't know if it's legally authenticated here in the United States, but they do have a copy, yes.
Did Mr. Germer die in the United States?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Do you remember what state?
California.
Off the record for a minute, can you tell me if you have such a document?
We have a copy of his will. I don't believe it was ever put in probate, but we have a copy of the document which purports to be his will.
No.
Do we have one of those?
I don't think so. We would like to have, no, we don't need it right this minute, but
While we're off the record, there was also a problem as far as I'm concerned, the authentication of Crowley as well.
You have authenticated copy of Crowley, don't you?
You need a copy of our authenticated copy.
Yeah.
We can get another authenticated copy.
Well, if I can see your authenticated copy, and do you have a copy of that for me? I don't need that right now, but it's at this point.
We have the book right here, Jim. You want to look at this final? This is that.
The first was Crowley and Gerber in the back.
Okay. Are you familiar, Mr. Marley? We're back on the record, I guess, I'm sorry. With a ruling from the Superior Court of California in 1976 in the matter of the estate of Sasha Germer, who was the widow of Carl Germer. Have you ever seen that particular
document? Yes, I have seen it so many times that I was always recognized when they picked it up just by the format.
Do you know, on your own knowledge at the moment, whether or not these documents that are the subject of this order in Mrs. Germer's estate are now, in fact, in the possession of Grady Hillman Mercury?
I am inclined to believe, to the best of my knowledge, that they aren't.
They are not?
They are not.
Do you know where they are, or do you have any idea where they are?
From the best of my knowledge and from the information I have received, they are now in the hands of Phyllis McMurtry, his wife or ex-wife.
And where does she live?
I don't know, and she has them concealed. Nobody knows where they are.
Do you have any ideas as to what documents may be there besides your own copy of your admission to OTO?
At this present stage of things, considering, if you will forgive me for expressing a moral value, considering the complete lack of character of Grady McMurtry, Helen Parsons-Smith, and especially Phyllis McMurtry, I don't know how many documents are there or what is there, but at the time that they got it, I also don't know, after the first robbery that's reported to me in Mrs. Germer's letters, I don't know how much was taken away, but she had stated that there was plenty left. Originally, there were at least five big steel file cabinets, you know, four drawers once, completely filled with Crowley's correspondence back and forth with all his most important disciples, and every possible conceivable scrap of paper and every possible conceivable diary of Crowley's. All things typewritten, reorganized and filed by Mr. Germer. Purely from the point of view of scholarship of comparative religion, to say nothing of the needs of psychologists, psychiatrists, and working mystics.
Would you not consider that those documents, whatever they may be, would be important to you and your...
I think they are priceless.
Have you ever made any effort to try to retrieve them?
Not legally yet, because of a complete lack of funds.
Now, the main focus of your action against Samuel Weiser, Inc. is a claim for violation of copyrights. And I would ask you if you could explain to me, since I believe you've entered into a contract agreement with Samuel Weiser for the publication of the commentaries of Al. Is that Equinox 5, number 1?
Yes.
And Samuel Weiser has a...
Excuse me.
Machine just crumbled. We're off the record. The word of your complaint by title, author, editor, edition, publisher, etc. Your answer was, to date I have identified the following volumes that contain unauthorized publications of the works described in count one. Now, you state that these works contain, that they are not unauthorized publications, but they contain unauthorized publications. I guess my question is, that's fairly unspecific, and we would like to know, with respect to that particular volume, which was, the first one that you mentioned was Kenneth Grant, The Magical Revival, which you and I just mentioned about. Are you able to tell us today that which you believe is an unauthorized publication within that work?
Okay, this part of the answer was prepared for me by a colleague in whose judgment in those things I have complete confidence. I would not be qualified to answer it, as you asked me, but at the time I stand by the position as it was given by my colleague, and later on you have plenty of opportunity if you want to interrogate him directly.
Well, I'm a little puzzled. Are you saying that you answered under oath questions that you have no personal knowledge of?
No, I had been informed of that. I had read, I had read his letter, so I had knowledge of the things that had been done.
But the information here of the 24 violations that you cite in answer 6A of these interrogations were supplied to you by someone else,
yes,
and you accepted them at face value.
Yes.
Thank you. On page 5, question 7 of your interrogatories, your answer to the question begins with the statement, unauthorized publications of the Crowley literary works. And again, we want to know if you are talking strictly about publications by Donna Samuel Wiser Incorporated, or are you talking about somebody else's publications? That is not clear from the answer in your letter, in your interrogatory here.
Well, if the answer is not satisfactory, you may demand clarification of it at any time, but it would be necessary to have all the volumes and make a prolonged research before we could give you a more complete answer. But if you would like a more complete answer, by all means, request it, and it will be done for you.
Well, perhaps we can cover it in the request for production of documents. You understand, I'm assuming, Mr. Moto, that we are trying to defend a very serious complaint, and in order to do that, we have to know what you're talking about.
We have no objections whatsoever to your request of evidence and clarification of questions and so forth.
All right, well, let's go to question number 8. The question was, identify any and all excerpts of literary works on which you hold a copyright, which defendant has published without authorization by you or your predecessors or title, and include the names and dates of such publications. If you're willing to do so, produce a copy. Your answer was that in each and every instance in which the defendant has printed quotations from literary works of Aleister Crowley, which have not passed into the public domain, in the books described in my answer to interrogatory number 6, and in any other publications of the works by Aleister Crowley, of which I am at present unaware, the publication has been without authorization from myself, the Society Ordo Templi Orientis in America, or any of the predecessors entitled to myself or that society. Now, are you prepared, as you were apparently not prepared then, to answer that question and identify any and all excerpts, because it was the excerpts that we asked you for, according to count number 2 in your complaint. Can that again be handled with the production documents?
It will take a while. And perhaps also further research on the part of Mr. Starr.
Thank you.
Sorry. Yeah,
okay,
go ahead. Here's your answer.
I was just going to say, we'd be glad to work at it for you, but you will realize it may take at least 1 month to get this thing together and answer of the type that you are asking for.
I understand, Mr. Moto, and perhaps then you will find yourself in the position that Mr. Weiser was when he was searching around for documents, too.
Okay, may we have just about a 3-minute break, Jim, and then I'll give you our...
Really, why don't you want to do this?
Yes, for tea.
Well, you're back on the record?
Yes.
You're going to supply me with more specificity than I don't need to go through every single one of these interrogatories if you're going to do that.
You need to clarify if you could take down the exact numbers of your voice.
Let's go on. Let's not give you what I want in this, and it's related to the specifics of those particular questions, 5, 6, 7, 8. In interrogatories again, on page 6, question 10, you were asked, explain the methods and evidence by which you intend to prove the defendant's unauthorized use of trade and service marks. But by that use, you have been deprived of substantial sums of money. Your answer was, the Society Ordo Templis in America in its present form was founded by Aleister Crowley. Is that a correct answer, Mr. Motor?